We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from five-star app Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host Ariel Garten, one of the founders of brain-sensing headband Muse. Join us each week as we introduce you to authors, experts, and thought leaders who share their stories on how meditation, mindfulness, and brain-focused practices have the power to change our lives. Whether you're just learning to meditate or want to deepen your practice, Meditation Studio, with hundreds of guided meditations, and Muse, which provides great biofeedback on your practice, are two awesome tools you'll want to have in your back pocket. Today's guest is author, speaker, and creativity evangelist, Denise Jacobs. Denise's most recent book is called Banish the Inner Critic, Silence the Voice of Self-Doubt to Unleash Your Creativity and Do Your Best Work. Denise met her own relentless inner critic, or inner bully as she likes to call it, when she was writing her first book. She dealt with imposter syndrome, constantly comparing herself to others, and judged herself harshly, sleepless night after night. She shares how she ultimately learned to turn off that negative voice so her own creativity would flow more freely. And yes, when your inner critic is silent, it does allow for us to be more creative, whether you're writing a book, making music, or embarking on any new creative project. Letting go of all that inner dialogue that keeps us stuck and is pretty darn annoying can be very liberating. She shares how we can actually rehabilitate our thoughts, especially the ones that are judgy and relentlessly compare us to others. You won't be surprised that things like mindfulness and self-compassion can be very helpful, but there's a lot more. Now, here's Denise to share her story. Denise, it is such a pleasure to have you on Untangle today. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I loved your book, Banish Your Inner Critic, Silence the Voice of Self-Doubt, and Unleash Your Creativity and Do Your Best Work. I love that title. It's so many of us need this. And I wanted to know your origin story. Like, what inspired you to write this book?
Ooh, that's actually that's a good question. So, and it's kind of a good story, actually. So what had happened is that my first book was called The CSS Detective Guide. And when I embarked upon writing that book, I was just having the most severe imposter syndrome and inner critic denial that you can possibly think of. I mean, like, I spent the first 2 days literally, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Oh my God, I was totally crying for 2 days. Like, I spent the first, I spent the first 2 days crying.
Aww, yeah.
Because I was just so freaked out and this huge anxiety storm, and reached out to some friends and was like, I'm totally freaking out. And then finally, after losing 2 days of a incredibly overly aggressive writing schedule, finally put on my big girl panties and bucked up and started working on the book. And the whole time I was writing the book, I just kept having these moments where I was just, what am I doing? I'm not enough of an expert. I shouldn't be writing this book. And at one point, I finally, it was just so bad that I stopped and I just did a search, went away from looking at stuff about CSS and whatnot, and just did a web search on how to get rid of self-doubt. What do you do? And I read a few articles, and then it was like something in my subconscious was like this. And so probably about a month later, like, woke up early in the morning, which is a lot of times when I get my ideas, like, woke up and like, I want to do a workshop about how to bust through creative block, fire your inner editor, and blah, la, 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 la. And like, this is in 2009. Like, this is a while ago, trying to write a book on CSS. So I kind of went back to that, but I have this little piece of paper from one of those pads. And I have this piece of paper that's just like, if I did a workshop, here are three exercises that I would do. And so then fast forward to February, when the book is done, or like actually March. So the book is, I finally finished the book, sent in the final chapters, and now I am trying to build the website for the book. And I end up having this moment where I go into this phenomenal flow state when I'm doing the designing. I was designing in Photoshop and I was just totally in the zone and totally in the mode, and I didn't want to stop. And it was super late. It was like 3 a.m. And I was like, I just want to do this one more thing. I'm just going to do this one more thing. And when I woke up in the morning after sleeping for 2 hours, I woke up and I still had all of this energy and all of this inspiration and motivation and just feeling like, you know, like I could just do anything. And I realized in that moment that that was what I wanted to help people feel like. This feels so amazing that I want to figure out how to take what just happened and teach people how to access this power that we all have. And I realized much later that the reason that I felt that good was because it was the first time in 9 months that I wasn't judging myself, that I wasn't second guessing myself, that I wasn't, you know, saying that this is sucks, you're not a good designer, people are going to laugh at you. Like, I wasn't saying any of that stuff. I was just in the flow. And I was like, that's it.
So here you are, you decide in 2009, you want to do a workshop or you want to teach busting through these creative blocks. Uh-huh. You're sort of evolving into this process yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did you, you know, get rid of that relentless inner critic, or like I think you call it in your book, that bully in your head?
And the bully.
The bully. How did that happen for you that you felt you could share this expertise with others?
So what happened was that I had gone through this process. I mean, I had gone through 9 months of, first of all, dealing with my inner critic every day, or day. It was there and I was like, not today. That's great. Just come back later because I have to finish this chapter. We'll talk afterwards. Going through this process of dealing with my inner critic every day, actually practicing creativity, actually putting myself in a situation where I had to produce. Not only did I have to be creative, but I actually had to execute upon my ideas.
Yeah. At
the end of that 9 months, I had this confidence, this creative confidence that I didn't have 9 months previous.
Where did that come from? When you say practicing creativity, I mean, here you are sitting with the imposter in your head and mm-hmm. your inner critic and the bully and, you know, all these voices that you talk about, like mm-hmm. that sabotage you and mm-hmm. us when we're mm-hmm. trying to be creative. And then you said you practice creativity. Did these ideas just come to you?
Yeah, so I practice creativity. This is actually a really good question because I haven't actually thought about it. So now I'm like kind of hearkening back, going back to my memory banks. But because I was dealing with my inner critic, because my inner critic would pop up and I would be like, we'll talk later, right? Like mm-hmm. then, and that's actually one of the techniques that I teach people when I'm like, you know, if your inner critic pops up, you don't have to pay attention to it. You can be like, no, mm-hmm. come back later. Like teach it like a, treat it like an intern is what the way I refer to it in the book. And so I was practicing these techniques that silenced the inner critic enough so that I could actually work with my ideas. And then the other thing that you know, as a person who produces things and does creative work, is that it's kind of only hard at the beginning, right? Like it's hard to get started, but once you actually start to get into the flow and you start getting into the process, then you're in it and you're actually not putting your brain power towards your anxieties or being mean to yourself or anything like that. You're just actually producing, you're actually working and doing.
And what does it take to flip that negative voice switch off? And the other question I want to ask is, does the inner critic or that negative voice sometimes mask as boredom?
Mm-hmm.
Where you kind of get really stuck and you yep. don't want to do something, yep. even though you yep. know you're supposed to love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's definitely one of those things where the inner critic can be really subtle. It can be almost like a blaring voice in your head. You suck. Oh my God. It yeah. could be that. And it could be you working on something and then all of a sudden getting really tired. You
yeah.
know, somehow or another, you mentally have assessed that you don't know what to do, or you don't know how to do it, or you don't exactly have the answer. And your tolerance, your level for frustration and uncertainty is really low. And so then subconsciously your brain goes, shut it down. You're suddenly very sleepy. Why don't you do that? Why don't you look on Facebook?
Distract yourself.
And that can be a version of the inner critic as well. But again, I think the main thing that I really try to emphasize in the book is that this is about raising your awareness, right? I mean, it's about kind of bringing this level awareness and kind of mindfulness to your everyday work and your everyday practices
yeah.
and being like, oh, okay, that thing is happening. Oh, okay, I'm feeling like this. That must mean that there was a thought that was just on the verge of my consciousness that triggered that reaction.
Yeah. Why do you think that we become so self-critical to begin with? Do you feel like it's anxiety or our defenses or fears?
I definitely feel like it's a protective mechanism. It's the kind of thing where I'm going to criticize myself before anybody else does and just save the trouble. It was so excruciating to hear it from somebody that I love and I know and I trust, or who that I at least respect. It'll just be better coming from me first.
Do you think that it's because we lack self-confidence in general? And I guess when you're saying it's from somebody at some point along the way, maybe criticized us in that, because I think you also talk about this, that sometimes these negative thoughts become like Velcro and they just stick with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's actually a really interesting process that we've got kind of these built-in processes, biases that, you know, we have just because we're human, like negativity bias mm-hmm. and fear conditioning. And we're always kind of like, because of negativity bias, always kind of searching for danger and things that we need to protect ourselves from. And then fear conditioning is that when we find them and they are particularly strong, then they go into a part of the brain that controls automatic reactions and responses so that we don't have to like use a lot of brain power to respond to them. Well, that's where that's also happens to be where like strong criticisms go when we're younger, when we're kids. They go right in there and it's like, oh, okay, don't want that to ever happen again. Let me figure out this a mechanism to protect against that. And that's the inner critic.
That's the inner critic. And why is it that the inner critic is such a big block to our being creative?
Well, it's really interesting. So I just made a very, it's kind of like everybody would kind of probably look at me and be like, you really just discovered this? But I just made a very interesting insight about myself just within the last week or two, which is I really like science. Like I really love when people do experiments and they actually have kind of like a scientific basis for things, which again, if you read my, you know, if you've read my book, you see all of the end notes and references and stuff. It's right. Like, how is that something you just realized? So anyway, I say all that to say that the neuroscience of the inner critic is and creativity is actually really fascinating. And it's one of the reasons why I feel like the information in the book is so powerful is because it's not just a coach saying, hey, well, you shouldn't beat up on yourself and you should think positively and all this stuff. It's like, no, this actually works because there have been numerous studies done by research institutions that have shown that basically, for example, when the inner critic is silent, this has been done with brain scans, with the part of your brain that essentially is the inner critic is silent, that's when you're able to be creative. Mm. Great study, and there's a TED Talk on it by Charles Lim that's called Your Brain on Improvisation. And he actually has people go into an MRI or an EEG machine, but he has them go into the machine. He's scanning their brains while they're playing improvisational jazz. So he's actually got a keyboard. He's got it engineered so that they've got this keyboard that can play while they're laying down. And the part of the brain that is the part of the brain that is in charge of self-evaluation, self-judgment, behavior modification, et cetera, part of the prefrontal cortex, that part of the brain goes silent when people do improvisation. And when people do hip hop, and I would imagine if you had people who were visual artists, people who were brilliant scientists, you would find the same thing. It's that part of the brain actually just powers down and is not as active, so that the other parts of your brain that are the associative, the free flowing things that connect dots with each other, those are the ones that come forward.
It sounds like it might be confusing in a way, because is it when we're creative, that inner voice and all of that negative thinking and anything else that's mucking up your creative flow just naturally silences because we're focused on music or writing or painting or some creative venture? Or is it the reverse, that you work on silencing your inner critic? Like you also suggest in the book that there are, I think you said, three skills that we need to get rid of, vanquish our inner critic. And so I'm curious what those are, but also what is it? Is it chicken and egg kind of thing? Or
I definitely think it's kind of chicken egg-ish to me, but I also feel you can get to a point where that part is silent because you're so in the flow of things. But it also could be that you get in the flow of things because that part is silent, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, you may need an arsenal of tools. I mean, for me, I feel the important thing is to, first of all, to know that it's achievable, right? To know that this is actually kind of a natural outcome of getting to this place.
Right.
You get to this place and you're going to feel whatever, there's such a long list of things, empowered and lose time and energized and focused for being in a flow state. And all the research suggests that you can't force a flow state, but you can set up all of the
conditions,
thank you, to be able to get in a flow state. So
yeah,
I feel like banishing your inner critic is part of the conditions that you can potentially set up to get to that place.
Yeah. So let's talk about setting that up. What are the three skills that you mention in the book to banish that inner critic?
First thing, the umbrella thing that kind of works in our favor is the fact that there's a thing called neuroplasticity, where our brains will adapt and change in the face of different stimulus. Right. So if we keep doing the same things over and over again, in other words, if we keep thinking the same kinds of thoughts over and over again, our brains won't change. They'll just become more of what they've always been. Mm-hmm, but if we start to shift our thoughts and shift our thinking and shift our focus and attention, then we will actually essentially start to develop different connections in our brains and start to actually create a whole new mind frame, which I just think is, you know, I just almost got chills just saying that. Neuroplasticity is the kind of the overarching thing. And then there's mindfulness, which is that kind of being aware of being aware, right? Having that, those moments where you can say, oh, like I was saying before, oh, okay, my brain's doing that thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's happening. All right, well, if that's happening, then I can have something else. I can make a different choice and I can have something else happen. I love the empowerment that comes from that, yes. You know, that creates. Also with that, then that kind of leads to like attention and focus. And where you put your attention and where you put your focus basically determines what your brain's going to do. And then finally, self-compassion, just being kind to yourself and knowing that having a lot of people erroneously believe that having an inner critic is helpful.
Yeah.
That it actually pushes them to be better and it pushes them to achieve and all this stuff. Well, that science to the rescue. There have been numerous studies that have shown that people actually don't do better with an inner critic. They actually do better with encouragement. They do better when they encourage themselves and they're kind to themselves rather than when they're really, really hard on themselves and yeah. are ruthless. Those three things together really, really are a powerful combination.
So we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
We talk about like sort of rehabilitating our thoughts a little bit. I mean, I love all these points: neuroplasticity, mindfulness, attention and focus, self-compassion. Are there practices or exercises that you suggest in the book that we can do to kind of rehabilitate our thoughts using some of these, you know, sort of overarching ideas?
Yes. And that's the whole book. The whole book is, it's just everything else is like, here, I'm explaining stuff to you so that you know why you're going to do this next exercise. Because one of the things I have to say, one of my own inner critical, anxious thinking when I was writing the book was I never wanted it to be something that people looked at and just said, this is just a bunch of fluff. Like, she didn't say anything. Have you ever been to like a conference and gone to a talk and like, and then afterwards said, they didn't actually say anything.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing actionable or
right, you
know, applicable, or I can't do any, like, I feel good now. And yeah. Later, I always wanted like to make sure that my book had like a lot of substance so that people would be like, oh, it was really weighty and there was so much to it, rather than, I didn't really know where I can get my life. So having said that, there's a lot of things that you could do. First, I think the first, which I think is effective and works for me, is to first know what variety of the inner critic you're dealing with. Because the inner critic, like we were saying earlier, shows up in a lot of different ways. I mean, it could be you telling yourself you suck and being like really hypercritical of yourself. It could be being so afraid of being judged by people that you hold yourself back. And so like kind of fearing judgment. And it could be that you're comparing yourself to other people and saying, well, I just, you know, I'll never like the Meghan Markle getting engaged to Prince Harry. And I'm just like, oh, see, like, why am I not engaged to a crowned prince? You know, with an heir apparent, why am I not? Like, I just need to step my game up. And it could be that you're just denying your creativity completely. It could be imposter syndrome, it could be perfectionism, it could be a lot of different things. And so first, I actually recommend to people that they raise this awareness so that they can see, oh, this is me being afraid of being judged.
Mm.
And then from there, it's like, great, I have a whole chapter and a whole list of exercises for different situations that have to do with the fear of being judged. So for example, one thing that kind of goes along with the fear of being judged is a practice that people do called rumination, which is when you think about something that you did in the past or something that you are afraid may happen in the future, and you think about it obsessively over and over again.
I think there'll probably be very few people listening to this podcast that haven't experienced that.
Right, right. Yeah. Most people have done that.
And right, so,
And so, so one of the exercises that I have, but I love because it's so quick and it's so easy and it's so accessible, is to take a squeeze ball. If you find yourself ruminating, if you find yourself just getting really worked up about something that you're afraid is going to happen in the future, or beating yourself up over something that happened in the past, however long ago it was, is to get a squeeze ball and put it in your non-dominant hand and just squeeze it for a couple of minutes. And that process actually has been shown to truncate the rumination cycle in your head, because you're basically tricking your brain into focusing on something else because you're using your non-dominant hand, which you don't have as much, you know, neural connections and stuff like
that. It distracts you from that rumination.
Totally distracts you and kind of helps you get your brain back in sync. I really love the exercises in particular in the book that are mind body hacks that aren't just, you know, you sitting down and thinking or writing something out, but actually that where you're using your mind and your body together to create something, a different response or reaction in your brain.
And how does that work?
Well, so I call it the rumination hand squeeze or anti-rumination hand squeeze. Like, that's one example. Another one of my favorite examples, and then I actually have this, I have people do it in my keynote where I talk about Banish Your Inner Critic, is using the gesture of swiping left to delete thoughts, that you don't want to be thinking anymore.
Oh, cool. I like that.
Yeah. So there's this really great woman who does this amazing research at the University of Chicago. And she has a whole body of research about the connection between gestures and thinking.
Wow.
And she's got a great TEDx talk. Her name is Susan Golden Meadows. And she has this whole thing about how if you combine gestures with speaking and thinking, that you can actually affect how you process and retain that information.
Isn't the brain so incredible that you can
change
it with these exercises and like sort of retraining and neuroplasticity, like learning to learn again and grow? And you mentioned being blissfully in the creative zone. And I think you mentioned it even in our interview today with the person that's playing music or the improvisational person or you when you're writing. And are there some of these exercises, or maybe it's all of these exercises, that help us get into that place? Or is it really that there has to be sort of love and passion in what we're doing to really have that creative bliss feeling?
Yes, I think that there's definitely that. But I mean, you can get into a flow state by doing mindless activities. I mean, you could get into a flow state by riding a bike or sweeping or organizing things, or you can get into a flow state with those things. So, and you may not be super passionate about organizing, although I know people who are. But I think that the passion and the interest is kind of what guides your focus and attention. The more passionate and the more interested in you are, the more you're inclined to really focus on something and really give it your attention. And then that kind of starts that cycle. One of the reasons I wrote the book was because I feel like the process of banishing the inner critic is one of those things that we can deliberately and consciously do that will help us get to a flow state.
Yeah.
Any one of the exercises can be kind of the gateway or the segue that helps you get into that place. And it could be that, you know, one thing totally works one time and then it doesn't work another time. And that's why, you know, the book has got so many different exercises, because it's like you need a toolbox. And this is something that we aren't really taught to do. I've actually talked to people who have done MFA programs, who have written books, or they're visual artists or tech people, like they're developers. And particularly for people who have actually gone into, have done like creative programs. And they've said to me, I went to school for 6 years and nobody's talking about this. Like there's no class on this. There's no, or nobody's talking about this in a consolidated way. Maybe this one professor over here, and then this one person over there and everything, but nobody's talking about this as a process. And so I feel like it's a disservice that we aren't given these tools kind of from the beginning. Okay, this is going to happen. And so this is what you need to do with it.
Exactly.
Because you're going to experience it.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely. And think how much more creative we'd be in everything that we do if we learned these tools.
Exactly.
Do your creativity workshops sort of follow the path of the book?
I developed a process based on the talks that I had been giving up to that point. I ended up developing a workshop and a process that was basically like the six-step process. So the first part of the process is what I like to think of as emancipating, and that's basically banishing the inner critic. The second part is what I like to call hacking the creative brain, figuring out, first of all, how your brain naturally gets into a creative state, and then doing different things that you can do, little hacks and tricks and stuff to actually get your brain into that state. The third part is managing time, actually exercising discipline so that you can actually have the time to be creative. Because a lot of times people are like, I want to be creative, but I don't have time to do it. There's a lot of things you can do with the 24 hours you're given. So, and then after that, I focus on generating ideas, then how to collaborate to make even more ideas, and then how to actually execute upon your ideas.
Yeah.
That's basically the flow of the workshop. And so in my mind, Banish Your Inner Critic is basically the first book in a series of like six.
Okay, got it. Great. Well, that gives you something to do for the next few years.
Yeah, right. I think I got my work cut out for me. Yeah.
You do. Well, and there's a quote, I think it was in an article that I read about you, that you said creativity gives people permission to experience more joy and to do more work that really feeds their souls.
Yeah.
And I think that's just such a beautiful mission to have. And I'm so happy that you're teaching people how to do this, because I think it can have such a great benefit and it's such a great gift to all of us. So thank you so much for writing this book and for doing all the work that you do. And I'm super happy that you could be on our show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for such great and insightful questions and making me think.
Yeah, well, you're amazing. So thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Denise for being with us today. For more information on her work, check out denisejacobs.com. And you can find her book, Banish the Inner Critic, Silence the Voice of Self-Doubt to Unleash Your Creativity and Do Your Best Work, at booksellers everywhere. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to download Meditation Studio in the App Store. We'll see you next time.